ideas on recovery based upon where you got sober, maybe the lineage that you're in. I know that we've got at least one member of the clergy, we've got some members of the professional community, right? There's some different ideas about about recovery, how we all got here. I think the biggest noose around many of us, our necks, is that we think we know more than we know, right? I know with myself, I sponsor a lot of people. I've taken a lot of people through the steps, and there's sometimes a little bit of arrogance and closed-mindedness that can go with that, right? Like I said, this invites each and everyone to have a clean slate and an open mind for a new experience today. So, a few disclaimers. This is not an AA meeting, okay? This is a 12-step meeting of recovery. This is a 12-step workshop. This is open to other addictions. I will be talking about my relationship with the steps in regards to Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's where I am from. But, you know, this can apply to any other affliction as well. This is not meant to be as a replacement for one-on-one work with a sponsor, okay? We're going to be touching on a variety of things, but the absolute magic happens in here with one-on-one work with a sponsor. This is not meant to be as a replacement for that. We will be using the fourth edition of Alcoholics Anonymous as a reference point, right? So, you know, if you are got sober through the 12 and 12, or if you got sober using some different literature, we're not referencing any of that today, okay? Alcoholics Anonymous is how the first 100 did the steps, and that's our reference point, right? Due to time constraints, we'll be cherry-picking certain excerpts from the big book. We're not going to have time to go through everything, right? So I'm going to be cherry-picking certain excerpts through the big book as we go through this process. And probably as much as anything, I am not a spokesman for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not a spokesman for any 12-step fellowship. I'm here to share my experience, and if my experience doesn't jive with your experience, that's okay, right? I'm going to share what helped get me sober, and like I said, if I might be wrong, you might be right. We both might be wrong, right? I've given up on that battle, right? What we're not going to do here today, though, is make this an open forum for debate. If someone doesn't agree with some of the things that we're doing or that I'm talking about, we can chatter at the break. We can chat after the meeting, right? I'm okay with that. But just simply, we're not going to have the time to be debating back and forth. Well, this is how I did it, and this is how they do it in Calgary, or, you know, whatever it might be, right? This is just me sharing my experience, and I'm not an expert or a spokesman. All right. So, welcome to the greatest show on earth, Alcoholics Anonymous. It really is. And I want to share a few things regarding the Big Book and some of the history around the Big Book, because I don't think people realize just how powerful of a program that this is and just how well that it works. This Big Book, this blue book, there has been 50 million copies of it that have sold worldwide. Right, absolutely amazing how many copies are out in distribution of this. There's been a number of 12-step fellowships, anonymous fellowships, that have adopted the 12 steps and the 12 traditions from Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyone want to throw a guess out there? How many 12-step fellowships, anonymous fellowships?
130.
Okay, we got 130. Anyone want to go higher or lower?
265.
Hey, that's close. 227 anonymous fellowships have adopted the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Powerful, powerful program. Now, the reason that we're not a catch-all, right? What we found is that Alcoholics Anonymous has a singleness of purpose, right? It's for alcoholics treating people with alcoholism. There'll be a number of other 12-step fellowships out there, you know, variety of different drugs, gambling, sex. There's Clutterers Anonymous. There's all sorts of stuff out there, right? But the reason we're not a catch-all is that we find that we need to have that idea of around identification, okay? Even though that the intent is good, and I've seen some meetings like that. It's like we're here to help everybody, right? And that's well-meaning. We want to help, but what we end up finding is that nobody gets helped, right? Not only do the alcoholics not stay sober, but the drug addicts or the gambler or whatever it might be, right, don't stay sober as well. So the only requirement for it to be a membership of Alcoholics Anonymous is a desire to stop drinking. Now, do many alcoholics have other afflictions? Yeah, right, absolutely, right? I qualify for a variety of other 12-step fellowships. Gambling was a big thing for me, right? There was lots of drugs, but when I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, out of respect for the fellowship I'm in, I announce myself as an alcoholic, right? I'm in a meeting of Cocaine Anonymous, I announce myself as an addict, right? Out of respect for the fellowship, right? Because I belong in both, so. Alcoholics Anonymous, the Big Book was named by Time Magazine as one of the most influential books written in English. The Library of Congress named it as one of the books that helped shape America. And this is arguably the most important thing that's happened in the 20th century, right? Like millions of people have been saved by the message in this Big Book and the program of action that's in this Big Book, okay? The big thing from today is I'm going to be taking a group through the steps over the course of 4 weeks. Today is steps 1, 2, and 3. In particular, the importance of step 1. I want to make sure everybody leaves here today to know exactly what it means to suffer from the disease of alcoholism. Okay? I'm not here to convince anybody that they suffer from alcoholism. I'm going to put some information on the table. And then you get to decide, yes, I have this, and no, I don't have this, right? But there's a big difference between an actual real alcoholic and a problem drinker. And we're going to put some information on the table that help make you decide for yourself and actually what it means to suffer from the disease of alcoholism. If you have this, I want to stress the hopelessness of your condition, right? There's some bad news today. If you have alcoholism, okay? But there's also good news, okay? We're also here to share hope that there is indeed a way out, okay? And I'm going to probably bust at least a couple myths today. I'm not sure when I'm going to bust them, but they're going to be bust, okay? Some of the stuff that you may have heard around the rooms in regards to maybe the speed of going through the steps, maybe some idea of that you're always going to be sick. I'm gonna address those. I'm not exactly sure, but they're gonna get hit. And my reference point will always be the Big Book. Okay, just a little background of my own story. Alcoholics Anonymous was the last stop on the block for me. Right, I always make the joke that I spent $50,000 on this Big Book. Right, and that's light. You know, I spent a lot of money on treatment centers, on doctors, on counselors, on therapists. Tony Robbins got some of that cash, right? This was indeed the last stop in the block, but I was also a chronic relapser in Alcoholics Anonymous for 7 years. I know some other people had the same kind of experience as me, right? I was in and out, in and out, in and out, thinking I was in AA, but I was being given the message of just go to meetings, just go to meetings, just go to meetings, right? And I stayed sick in AA for a long time. I almost died getting here, and I almost died in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And, you know, throughout the process, I'm going to be touching on that experience and what I did about it. So the question often comes, I'm just going to touch on this briefly. We'll be hitting this more when we get to step 12. But it's exactly, what exactly is a sponsor? Okay, now, I guess we got some new faces today. Maybe just by a show of hands, who's in their first 1 year of recovery? Just by a show of hands. Wow, awesome. At least half the room. Fantastic. Okay. So I want to just briefly touch on what exactly a sponsor is and what a sponsor is not, at least on how it was taught to me. Okay. What a sponsor isn't. Is, and we're just simply not qualified for this kind of stuff, right? Sponsor isn't your therapist. It isn't your mother, your father. A sponsor isn't to buy you cigarettes, be your chauffeur, be your babysitter, or be your higher power, right? We're not qualified, simply not qualified, right? What is a sponsor? The sponsor's to take you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous at a pretty good pace, gets you through spiritual experience to have the obsession to drink removed, and then to help you help others. Okay? As you go out there and become a sponsor and help other alcoholics. All right? Does anyone, well, let's try it this way. Anyone available to sponsor, please raise your hand. Okay? We've got a lot of people. If you need a sponsor, there's no reason you should be leaving here today without one. Okay? And you can hang out afterwards and, you know, chat with a few people. So we're going to be taking somebody or everybody through the steps here. We're going to get right into the work here right away. Where do I want to start here? When should somebody be taking the steps?
Immediately.
Immediately? I agree. Mm-hmm. What else? There's a little bit more to it.
When they have a sponsor?
Agreed.
When they be in detox so they can actually think clearly enough.
So all of that's true. The literature says, do you want what we have? And then the key part is, and are you willing to go to any lengths? Then you're willing to take certain steps. Okay. As a sponsor, I have anyone that I sponsor sign the open page of the big book. There's a little blank page at the beginning. And that's a question I ask to anybody. I ask two questions as a sponsor to anyone that I sponsor before we get started. A, are you willing to go to any lengths to get sober? And if the answer is no, we're done, right? There's no reason to go any further, you know? And then the second question I ask anybody is, once we're done this process, I fully expect you to be sponsoring other alcoholics. And if the answer is no, we're done. Now, it doesn't mean I'm not nice to them at meetings, right? But there's just, I'm not going to participate in someone else's suicide, right? If they're not willing to do what they need to do, like I said, I'll be friendly with them at meetings, but, you know, it's just not going to work, right? And a lot of this willingness stems off step one. Do you have alcoholism or not, right? If you get a really, really clear idea that you're suffering from a fatal, chronic, and progressive illness, the willingness to go through with the rest of the work tends to be a lot stronger than if you're coming in here just trying to avoid some consequences, maybe trying to hang on to a marriage, hang on to a job, whatever it might be. We get that a lot. People don't really want to do the work. They just want to get the consequences or people off their back, right? When somebody wants recovery as much as they want oxygen, then there's a good chance, okay? So let's just get right into the meat and potatoes of this. And I'm not sure how this is going to work with the camera. But you can just mark down, if you're taking notes here, that alcoholism is a three-part problem. We're going to do some cherry picking in the book, a few readings, and then we're going to steer it back and try to make this interactive and just see if you suffer from this or not. So the first thing is, number one, physical, okay? The first part of this illness, physical allergy to alcohol. And in brackets, this means an allergy. Probably no one will be able to read this. Phenomenon of craving, that's what that says. If you can read my writing, probably not. Okay, I have a physical allergy to alcohol. We're gonna touch on a couple readings, and then we're going to go back to each individual here and see if this actually applies to you. Okay? So we're going to read the first paragraph of the doctor's opinion, XXVIII. If we can find that. Said we'll hit a few readings and then we'll steer it back and see if it applies to the individuals in the room here. And again, you can sub in the different names here. Like I said, the big book is used in a number of other fellowships. If your issue is a different drug, then just sub out that drug for the word alcohol. XXVIII, we're going to read the first paragraph. Okay, and I'll read this. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never, you can highlight that word, never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. So already here, they're introducing this as an abstinence-based program, okay? This is not harm reduction. There's some other programs out there that do harm reduction. That is not Alcoholics Anonymous. That is not 12-step, okay? And I'm not going to weigh in on what other programs are doing, but it's not what we do here, okay? These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit, they cannot break it. Once having lost their self-confidence, their chance upon, their reliance upon human things, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Okay, we're going to hit one more reading and then we're going to come back and discuss this as a group. Let's go to page XXX. And we're going to read the second last paragraph here. All these and many others have but one symptom in common. Okay, so this is the thing that every alcoholic, real alcoholic, has in common. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy that differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated, okay? So you got this for life. If you have it, you have it for life. I announce myself as a recovered alcoholic. It has nothing to do with the physical part of this illness. If you got this, you got this, right? It doesn't matter how much work you do around here, doesn't how much time you have in, doesn't matter how much therapy you have. If you got this, you got this. You're genetically wired in this fashion. All right, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence, okay? So now they're putting an exclamation mark on the idea of what this is. This is an abstinence-based program. If you have an allergy, right, you can't just put it this way. If I got an allergy to strawberries, I can't just have the odd strawberry. I can't taper down on my strawberries, right? The idea is around permanent abstinence. So what they're saying here is that the alcoholic, and it roughly applies to about 10% of the population, we process ethyl alcohol in a different fashion than the average person. And how that looks like in layman's terms is my plan is to have one or two drinks, right? I put alcohol in my system. My system processes the ethyl alcohol differently than the average person. And I break out in a yearning for more alcohol, right? They called this a phenomenon. This book was written back in 1935, distributed in 1939. They called it a phenomenon at the time is because at that time, they weren't able to prove up metabolism. Science actually has backed up this theory. The pancreas and the liver process alcohol differently with an alcoholic than the average person, right? There's some really, really good articles around this. But at the time, they called it a phenomenon because they couldn't prove up metabolism. So what that means is my plan is to go out and have one or two drinks, right? My plan is to have one or two, and I have five. I have 10. I have 20. I have 20 and call my dealer. I have 20 and call my dealer and go to the casino, end up on an airplane. I don't know, right? I am not in charge. Right? Now I used to get the odd win, but it got a lot worse as I got older, right? I process booze differently than the average person. I process ethyl alcohol differently than the average person. Okay. So steering that back to everybody in the room. Again, if you got a different drug of choice, then apply this to your drug of choice. Has anyone ever intended on going out and having one drink or one snort or one bump or whatever it might have been and significantly overshot the mark? All right? Okay. Hey, two hands. Some people are putting up two hands. So this is the physical part of this illness. Okay? Like I said, I got this part for life. It doesn't matter how much work I do. It doesn't matter how much therapy I have. It doesn't matter how much time I have in. It doesn't matter how many people I sponsor. I can never safely drink alcohol. I don't know what's going to happen. Okay? That's not what it, when we refer to ourselves as recovered alcoholics, it does not apply to the physical part of this illness. Okay? So, by the show of hands, and I really want to stress, you know, look back at your experience. I really want to stress the importance of having this belief, not just on a mental level, but deep down inside of you, deep down in your core. By a show of hands, who believes to their deepest inner core that they suffer from the physical allergy? Just by a show of hands. Okay. So, number two. Now, if this was a one-part illness, it would be pretty simple. Just stop drinking. The second part of this illness is the obsession of the mind. Like I said, if I had an allergy to strawberries, right? Simple solution, just stop, right? I wouldn't be trying to figure out, well, maybe I should just have strawberries on Sundays or just on the weekends or different brands of strawberries, right? You know, if I truly understand that I have an allergy to something, I cut it out, I stop, right? So alcoholism lives right between the ears, right? Alcoholism centers in the mind. Now, again, our reference point is the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to touch on a few readings, and we're going to steer it back to everyone in the room and see if it applies to you. Page 23, first paragraph. So these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, right? Simple, it'd be over. Thereby setting this terrible cycle in motion. If you got a highlighter, highlight this sentence. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. This is where your alcoholism lives. It's in your brain. It's between your ears. Okay? If you ask him why he started on the last bender, the chances he will offer you any one of 100 alibis. Sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc an alcoholic's drinking bout creates. They sound like the philosophy of a man who, having a headache, beats himself on the head with a hammer so he can't feel the ache. If you draw this fallacious reasoning to the attention of the alcoholic, he will laugh it off or become irritated and refuse to talk. Okay, I imagine some of that language sounds familiar. We'll do a couple more readings and then we'll kind of steer it back to each of us as individuals. Let's go to page 30, first paragraph. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally, right, the two parts, different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising from our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity and death. Okay? We see a lot of people die from this illness, you know, and they know they shouldn't be drinking or using or whatever it is. Okay, a couple more readings and we'll steer back. Now, just to note, anytime you see anything in the Big Book in italics, pay extra attention to it. It means it's important. And we're going to go to page 24, second paragraph. My sponsor, he lives out in Texas, and he refers to this as the secret handshake of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. Okay? If somebody says to me, I chose to quit drinking. Congratulations, good for you. By definition, you're not an alcoholic. Okay? You might be a problem drinker. You might have had a problem with alcohol. But by definition, what it's telling me here is we've lost the power of choice in drink. Right? It's almost like a sober blackout, like a blank spot, a strange mental blank spot. Right? It's just like, all of a sudden I'm back at it again. It's like, I thought you quit drinking. I'm like, I thought I did too. Right? And yet here I go again. We'll do one more reading, then we'll steer this back around as a whole, okay? Page 43, last paragraph. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times, again, not all the time, because most of the time we know better. At certain times, it's that strange mental blank spot that we're up against here, okay? Has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being, it's already introducing that we're beyond human power here, that any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. Okay, so it's introducing the idea that based on your experience, how well has your willpower worked for you? Right? So let's steer it back to my experience and then experience as a group as a whole. So I would wake up after a bender full of shame, full of guilt, full of remorse, right? Full of fear. All these different reasons that I should have stopped drinking. And there were many times, like I have no problem stopping. I just can't stay stopped, right? You know? And there was many, many, many times where I would say, that's it. It's over. I am not drinking again. And I'm actually telling the truth. In that moment, you hooked me up to a polygraph test. I passed. I passed the polygraph test in that moment. I'm telling the truth. There's been many, many reasons over the years. Health-wise, scares with the law. I mean, there was a time I got detained by the Mexican feds, right? I had to buy my way out of a Mexican prison, right? Because of drugs and alcohol. And I'm saying in that moment, okay, God, just get me out of this one. Please, just get me out of this one. And I promise I will never, ever, ever do this again, right? Thankfully, the Mexican feds are a little bit crooked. They took some money, right? And I buy my way out of there. And guess what I'm doing within 24 hours? The thing that I said I would never, ever do again, right? The strange mental blank spot. This is not about willpower. Right? Alcoholics and drug addicts are strong, strong people, but not here, right? We are, this beast is bigger than us, if you have this. So, by steering it back to everyone here, did anyone wake up after a run full of shame, full of guilt, full of remorse, and then that firm resolution, like, that's it. I am never, ever, ever doing that again, by a show of hands. Okay. Got a couple of two hands again. All right. So, do you believe to your innermost self, again, not academically, not here, right? Look back at your experience. How many times has this happened? I bet you I quit 100 times and meant it. At least, right? By the show of hands, who believes right into here, in your core, that you suffer from the mental obsession? Okay. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? These are the two qualifying factors that make an alcoholic, right? It's a three-part illness in my eyes, but it's a two-part illness for qualification purposes, all right? Now, if anyone ever comes up to me and says, my wife might be an alcoholic, I might be an alcoholic, my brother might be an alcoholic, right? I ask two questions. I don't talk about the war story. Don't care, right? That's not the common theme that we all have. That was one of the confusing parts for me. When I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I would hear, well, I'm an alcoholic because I got five DUIs. I'm like, well, I don't have five DUIs. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic. Or I'm an alcoholic because I live under a bridge. Well, I don't live under a bridge. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic. Or I'm an alcoholic because I got 15 years in prison. I don't have 15 years in prison. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic. right? We, in my eyes, we have to ditch these war stories and talk about what we all have in common, right? It can be the gangster and it can be the church lady that suffer from this illness. And if we get rid of the war stories and talk about our similarities, right? Now, our similarities is the physical part and the mental part. So if someone comes to me and they say, I might be an alcoholic, I ask them, what happens when you start drinking? What happens when you stop drinking? Right? Now, again, so this isn't how Mark sees it, and I can reconcile this with our literature. We're going to go over to page 44. And in the first paragraph, these are the two qualifying factors. In the preceding chapters, we've learned something about alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. Here's a question you ask. If, when you honestly want to, you cannot quit entirely, right? The mental obsession. Or if, when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, the physical allergy. If that be the case, you may be suffering, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Okay? Those are the two qualifying factors. Okay? Obsession and physical. All right? Now, I do believe this to be a three-part illness, though. Right? But for qualification purposes, only two. We're going to introduce the spiritual malady. Now, spiritual malady is how I feel when I'm not drinking, right? This is me in my sober state. I started drinking at the age of about 12. I think I needed one when I was 6, okay? Because that's about how far back I can remember where I didn't feel comfortable in my skin, right? The Big Book uses some very specific language in the doctor's opinion. It talks about the alcoholic when they're not drinking. It uses three terms: restless, irritable, and discontented, right? Alcohol treated my alcoholism, right? It's tough to get your brain around that one. You know, but it's the only thing that made me feel better, right? Alcohol was never my problem. Alcohol was my solution, okay? And it worked. I was better with alcohol for a period of time. When I discovered alcohol at the age of 12, my life got better, not worse, right? I was able to talk to women. I was better in business. I was not afraid to fight, right? I was absolutely riddled with fear and uncomfortable in my skin in a sober state. Alcohol took all that away until it quit working, until it didn't, okay? So what my sponsor taught me to do is turn statements into questions. We're gonna just kind of further look at the spiritual malady in the Big Book and turn some statements into questions. And again, the spiritual malady, this is something that not only happens in early recovery, but I see the spiritual malady come back with members that are 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years sober, right? The spiritual malady comes back. We're uncomfortable in our skin in a sober state. And sometimes we start reaching out for other things if it's not booze. You know, the suicide rate for sober alcoholics is alarming. It really, it is, right? Most people kill themselves in a sober state because of the spiritual malady. And let's just kind of talk about this a little bit and see if this applies to each of us as individuals. So let's go to page 52. Second paragraph. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems. Okay, this is why I do not use the spiritual malady for qualification purposes. We as alcoholics don't own the spiritual malady, right? People feel uncomfortable in their skin if they're depressed. There might be some other things going on, maybe childhood trauma, who knows, right? There might be a variety of different things on the go. I do not use this as a qualification purpose. But if you don't think the spiritual malady is a lot more prominent in alcoholics and drug addicts, you just simply haven't been paying attention, right? So let's hit a few statements and turn them into questions. So page 52, second paragraph, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply our human problems with the same readiness to change our point of view. So let's change these questions, or sorry, these statements and turn them into questions, okay? By a show of hands, in a sober state, were you having problems with personal relationships? Okay. Were you having trouble controlling your emotional nature? Were you a prey to misery and depression? Were you having trouble making a living? And we're not talking about money here. Okay, we're talking about being happy with what you do. Did you have a feeling of uselessness? Were you full of fear? Were you generally unhappy? Were you having trouble being of real help to other people? Just leave them up. Okay. Yeah, there you go. So this is the alcoholic without alcohol. Alcohol treated my alcoholism. It's a tough thing to get your head around. Right? It worked for a long, long time. It made me feel better. Now, you take somebody like me and just remove the alcohol, that's like a form of torture. I need a sufficient substitute. This is where you see a lot of alcoholics. When they quit, they put down the drink, their life doesn't get better. It gets worse, right? That's what the normal people will never, ever understand about alcoholics and drug addicts. It's like, you quit drinking, why aren't you better? I'm like, if you knew how I felt when I wasn't drinking, you wouldn't ask me why I drank. Right? The spiritual malady. This is us in a sober condition. Now, the spiritual malady can come back in sobriety. I see a lot of people go back out 5, 10, 15 years, right? Or, you know, and this is not an AA meeting, so I'm going to get outside of our singleness of purpose. You see other addictions start coming up, right? Spiritual malady comes back. They start gambling. They start reaching out for prostitutes, porn addiction, right? Whatever. Right, this is an itch that must be scratched, right? And it's like a form of torture. It's just like, it's like death by a thousand incisions. It doesn't happen overnight. It's just like a little bit by a little bit by a little bit by a little bit, right? And then it's just like, I am just so uncomfortable in my skin. It's where we see a lot of people, 6 months, 1 year sober, 2 years sober, awesome, doing amazing, right? And mainly because they're doing what the program asks you to do. And then they get, their lives get really good. And they get a little bit complacent, right? And they start drifting away and drifting away from the program. Right? They're not doing the things they used to do. The spiritual malady comes back, and either A, they go back to drinking, or if you heard the term dry drunk, right? They're so miserable in their sobriety that, you know, it's, you almost want to offer them a drink. It's like, the public service, please have one, you know? Like, come on, you're hard to be around. So. By the show of hands, again, to your innermost self, not academically, do you feel that you suffer from the spiritual malady portion of this illness? Okay. Three-part problem. Two-part for qualification purposes, three-part problem. Again, I think that the spiritual malady is a lot stronger with alcoholics and drug addicts. Right, we get a lot of people out there in AA land, they argue about, is this a two-part problem or a three-part problem? Honestly, I think they all just need to get over themselves. If you do the steps, it honestly doesn't matter, right? But for qualification purposes, two parts. Okay. Over on page 30, we're going to ask one question here now. Second paragraph, we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self, not our academic selves, that we were alcoholics. So by a show of hands, who concedes to their innermost self that you suffer from alcoholism? Okay, what's it say right after that? This is the first step in recovery. Okay, you're done step one. Doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. Now, what I do want anyone that has this illness to understand that based on your own willpower, and again, go back and look at your experience. Based on your own willpower, you are 100% screwed, right? So I want to give you a fatal dose of alcoholism. If you could have stopped, you would have, right? I'd prefer not to be here, right? I wish I could have stopped on my own and just carried on with merry old life, right? This is the thing that makes an alcoholic an alcoholic. I want to stress the fatalness of your illness. You are 100% screwed based on your own willpower, okay? Now, if I didn't share hope after that, that would just be cruel and unusual punishment. There is a way out, okay? There is hope. And that's actually the steps of 12-step, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, before we move on to step two, I just want to introduce the solution. I got a three-part problem. I got a three-part solution. This is the AA symbol. Okay, I got a three-part problem, I got a three-part solution. Now, my promise to anybody in this room today is if you live in the center of the circle and the triangle, you work all three parts of your program, you will never have to drink or use another drug again, okay? Now, when I was coming into Alcoholics Anonymous for 7 years as a chronic relapser, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, I worked one part of this program, okay? Unity means meetings. Recovery means working the 12 steps. And service means, giving back and sponsoring. So I was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous as a chronic relapser for 7 years, doing what I was told, which was meeting makers make it, 90 and 90, right? Some of the stuff that you hear around the rooms, none of it comes from our literature, right? And if I was to plot myself, I was right here. Not understanding why I could not get well, okay? I remember being told, do 90 and 90. I did 100 meetings in 90 days, and I wanted to put a bullet in my head. Okay? Meetings alone did not treat my alcoholism. Okay? I had to do the entire thing. Right? I need to work an entire program, which is to be somewhere in here. Okay? In the center of the circle and the triangle. When I call my sponsor out in Texas and I'm struggling with whatever it might be, you know, maybe I'm suffering from some depression, maybe I'm just not feeling okay, maybe I'm carrying on some resentments. The first question he asks me is plot yourself. Draw the circle and the triangle. Where are you? Are you working all three parts of a program? Right? How many meetings a week are you getting to? Okay, we'll talk about that. Are you working the 12 steps? Do you start in the morning with prayer and meditation, right? You write an inventory. Where are you at with your amends? And then service. What are you doing to give back, right? You know, I've been a taker all my life. What are you doing to give back? Are you sponsoring? Are you doing anything to give back to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Again, that's my promise to anybody here today, is if you work a three-part program, there's no reason where you need to drink and drug again. Not only that, but it alleviates the spiritual malady. When I start getting that twist, and it happens, it's happened to me over and over. I learn by pain, right? I don't learn by pleasure. I didn't say, hey, I'm feeling wonderful today. Let's do a workshop, right? You know, I learn by pain, you know, and it's usually the spiritual malady coming back. It's my little tap, tap, tap on the shoulder that, okay, I'm getting complacent. I'm getting sloppy. I'm getting lazy. and it forces me back in the program because I'm not driven off of pleasure, I'm driven off of pain. So, and I'm pretty sure most of you are the same way, right? You know, it's a thing that helps us learn. So we're gonna take a break here in a second. I want to pass the basket around here really quickly. We do have some costs to cover. Maybe just pass that around.
Sure.
If you have something wonderful, if you don't, that's fine. Yeah, that's going around. Does anyone have any questions in regards to the physical allergy, the mental obsession, the spiritual malady? Any questions or comments? All right, let's take a 7-minute break. Cool. How long does it take to have a smoke? 7 minutes. No more minutes. There you go.
Stop video.
Nah, you can leave it on. Yeah.
Some extra stuff.
Yeah. Bonus. A lot of people that come in here with challenges around God. Okay. In our literature, it says 50% of our original membership showed up atheist or agnostic, but still had the capacity to recover if they could be honest. Okay. This isn't really a program of, well, it is, but it gives you a lot of room to create your own God or create your own higher power, right? Again, this idea of doing the set-aside prayer is to set aside any old prejudices that you may have had. Maybe it was some stuff that happened as a kid. Who knows, right? I showed up here I said I was an atheist, but I was actually an agnostic because I would do foxhole prayers, right? So if I had enough drugs in my system, you know, and I'd be up at night and my heart would just be going a million miles an hour. You know, I told everyone I didn't believe in God, but then I'd start to pray, right? It's like, oh, just get me through the night. Please, God, help me get through the night. So there was foxhole prayers, right? Which basically means I believed all along, but I was an agnostic, right? Thought there was a God out there, but I just didn't think he had anything to do or wanted anything to do with me. Right. So I'm going to stress that any challenges with step 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever it might be, I hear it all the time. I got challenges with God. Like, no, you don't. You got challenges with step 1. If you are convinced to your innermost self you're suffering from a fatal chronic illness and progressive illness, you'll try God. Right. But here's the beauty is Alcoholics Anonymous allows you to create your own God, your own higher power, as it introduces it in step two, power greater than yourself. Okay. So by a show of hands, does anyone have any challenges around the concept of God? Okay. Awesome. Yeah. About half the room, right? Same as me. This program allows you to create your own God. Now, if I'm sponsoring somebody and I said, do you have any challenges around God? And they say no, boom, we're moving on, right? I'm not going to spend a bunch of time trying to create a higher power for them if they already got one. We're carrying on, right? Now, again, one of the biggest things I want to stress with anybody that I sponsor is that the importance of them becoming future sponsors. So even though they may not have any difficulties with God, they may be sponsoring somebody that does. So it is important to at least have some good information and direction to help get somebody through the other side. Okay. So we're just going to do a little exercise here. And if you already got a real strong concept of God, wonderful, right? But I'm going to have everyone do a little exercise on a blank piece of paper or just some open room that you have. Just write down powers greater than me. And these are things that'll help get you and keep you sober. And I want you to just start writing. Anything me plus, beyond you. I'm not a big fan of the doorknob. I'm not a big fan of the chair, right? But these could be things such as, yeah, if it's just one word for you and it's the word Jesus, then wonderful, right? Maybe it's nature. Maybe it's creator of the universe. Maybe it's prayer. Maybe it's meditation. Maybe it's just the word love. Maybe it's all those things, right? Just start writing anything that applies to you, that are powers greater than you. Maybe the word G-O-D is a group of drunks, right? G-O-D. Again, this is your list. Alcoholics Anonymous allows you to build anything that seems good for you, however inadequate it may feel. This is a beginning. This is a start. The big thing with Alcoholics Anonymous is to keep the feet moving. Like I said, if it's the word Buddha, then Buddha. Or Jesus, then just Jesus. Whatever it is. Right? But again, I came here with lots of prejudices and lots of struggles. And this helped me get my feet moving. Okay? So just go ahead and do a little bit of writing. Everyone got a list? Okay. So again, if you came in here already with good faith, then wonderful. But the key part is I want to make sure that you're qualified to help an atheist or an agnostic as they come into the rooms, right? There's a line in the big book. It says, God either is or he isn't. And if he is, he's either everything or he's nothing. What's your choice to be? So if God is everything, then God is also everything on your list, right? So you can just change the word powers greater than me. You can cross it out and just put the word God. And this is what was done with me. I'm not saying I was right, that I'm right, but this is my experience here, okay? This helped me keep my feet moving. Again, if you already had strong faith, then probably just one word on your list. With me, there was more to it. Now, I remember being in, and I'm going to reconcile this with some stuff in the big book here. I remember being at a treatment center years ago in Phoenix, and it was a state-funded treatment center, which means it was rough. There was a lot of gangsters in there. And there was one guy with a full face tattoo, right? And there was me and another guy in there, and we were sharing some hope, right? And you could tell he was on the edge of his seat, and he was excited, and then he would cross his arms and stare at me and mean mug me, and then he was excited, and he'd cross his arms and mean mug me. And you could tell the guy was quite conflicted, right? Then afterwards, he's like, what if you don't believe in God? I'm like, that's fine. I said, do you believe that I believe? He's like, well, yeah. He goes, then I asked him, I said, are you at least willing to believe? And it kind of just threw him back, right? He's like, well, yeah, I'm willing to believe. That's all our literature asks, okay? And again, let's make a reference point to that so that it's not as Mark sees it, okay? Let's go over to page 47. And if you do have challenges, even if you don't have challenges around God, I really encourage you to read the chapter called We Agnostics. Okay? It allows you a lot of room. And for me, you know, I was in my first year of recovery and I was trying to struggle with this concept of God, God of my own understanding, right? And I was still in the oil and gas industry, bouncing around all these different small cities. And I heard one guy taking a 32-year birthday cake for sobriety. And I'm like, I'm going to pay attention to this guy. And he kept on calling it the God of his not understanding. And something just clicked for me, right? Like, do I believe there's something out there? Yep. Can I define it? No. Actually, I don't think I can. But I'll choose to experience it through other people, right? Now, that's something that just worked for me. right? I call it the God of my not understanding, right? I truly believe there's something out there. I can't define it though. And again, that's just my experience, right? If you got a stronger experience or if you come from a religious denomination, wonderful, right? But it was a start for someone like me. But let's go back to our literature and see what our literature says here. Second paragraph on page 47. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe? Here's the key part. Or am I even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? So, again, the question that I ask people, is it possible that there just might be, or are you at least mildly suspicious that there just might be a power out there other than you? Yeah, that's possible, right? So here's what the literature says. As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we empathetically assure him that he is on his way. On his way to what? Spiritual experience. What else? What's next?
Recovery.
Step three. Yeah, that's it. Okay, we're on our way to step three. That's all our big book is asking us. I see too many people get hung up here, right? If you're having a two problem, I promise you, you're having a one problem. If you believe you're suffering from a chronic, fatal, and progressive illness, right? You'll keep an open mind, and that's all it's asking us to do here, is keep an open mind. Okay? So by a show of hands, does anyone now believe, or at least willing to believe, that there just might be something out there other than you? All right. You're done step two. Step three. There's some bad news here. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Okay. So make a decision. There's, let's use an analogy, and if you've worked with me before, don't answer. So there's three birds sitting on a fence. Two of them decide to fly away. How many are left? Three birds on a fence, two of them decide to fly away. How many are left? One. There's actually still three. They've made a decision to fly away, but they haven't flapped their wings yet. Okay? Step three is just a decision. The work and the magic in this program happens in 4 through 9. Okay? This is purely a decision. But we are gonna have some readings around step three. But I hear people weep and wail and like, oh, what does that mean to give myself to God, right? And this is all it means is that you're going to continue on with the rest of the steps with a level of thoroughness and honesty. The magic happens in 4 through 9. Okay. But let's make some reference points for step three. And then we do have an action step that goes with step three. Page 60. Halfway down, it says, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas, right? Which is basically what we've done to this point. That we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, we're fired. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, right? Again, if you look at all the different things that you tried with human power, the counselors, the therapists, the rehab centers, again, all that stuff is wonderful. Been there, done that, and it did not remove the obsession to drink. Wonderful stuff happened in there, but it did not remove the obsession to drink for me. And then see that God could and would if he were sought. Okay, being convinced we are at step three, which we decided to turn our will over the life as God as we understood him, okay, which we did in step two. Just what do we mean and what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Okay, again, We learned a lot of that in step one, right? We're not management material. On that basis, we're almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like the actor who wants to run the whole show and is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if people would only do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He might be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he might be mean, egotistical, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he's most likely to have varied traits. Okay, so what it's introducing here is the alcoholic believes there's a God, he just thinks it's him or her, right? You know, it's the actor that wants to run the whole show. I have an alcohol problem, but I also got a control problem. I'm pretty sure I got a control addiction, right? You know, like the actor that wants to run the entire show. If people would just do as I wish, then life would be grand. Okay, so here's the AA punch in the face. You ready? So with the treatment centers and the counselors and the therapists that I've been to, often they would introduce the root cause of alcoholism as trauma or childhood trauma, right? Again, I don't ever want to discount that. I've listened to enough Fifth Steps to know that trauma is a big deal, and I'm a big advocate of outside help, but it is not what is being given to us from the literature of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I'm a big advocate in outside help and therapy, right? But the AA punch in the face, let's go over to page 62. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. It's like, oh no, right? Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but invariably find that sometime in the past we made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. All right, so what it's telling me is my issue isn't trauma, although trauma might have exasperated it, might have made it worse, right? But it's telling me that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of the problem. Now, when I first read that, I had the envision of the loud, obnoxious braggart, right? It's like, well, I'm not selfish and self-centered. I help all kinds of people, right? Selfishness and self-centered is basically just a person that thinks a lot and their favorite topic is them, right? Now, if you look at your thought pattern, how often were you thinking of other people? How often were you thinking of what you could bring into the streams of life, right? The person that's hiding in their basement, afraid to come out, is equally as self-centered as the loud, obnoxious braggart, okay? Because it's obsession with self, right? It's me thinking about me all the time, right? So going back to the book here. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They rise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. Though they usually don't think so, right? Ask them, like, no, I'm not selfish, right? They're the last ones to see it. Highlight this sentence, probably the most important big sentence in our entire big book. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. And then highlight the other sentence coming up, because it's a death threat. We must, or it kills us. Right? This whole program is the idea of getting out of self, right? This is where my original sponsor was a big, big, big advocate of service work. Not when I want to, right? Especially when I'm not feeling well. I used to go to a number of noon meetings, and it was typically when the spiritual malady was coming back for me. I'm twisted up in my own skin. I'm miserable, right? And the way it was taught for me, because again, what we do in here and what goes on out there are two different things. What I hear out there is take care of yourself, right? Be kind to yourself. Give yourself a little bubble bath. I'm like, I've worked on me enough, right? I'm obsessed with myself. What I've done is a prayer that was taught to me. It's like, God, please put someone in front of me suffering more than myself, right? And then I go to a noon meeting, and there was never a doubt who that person was, right? It's like, oh, there he is, right? You know, and then I go talk to that person. And guess, as I'm speaking to that other person, guess who I'm not thinking about? My favorite topic, me, right? This is what this whole program is about, is getting out of self. Okay? And then it says, bottom of page 62. This is the how and why of it all. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work, right? So us being the master of everyone else's actions just didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama life, God was going to be our director. He is our principal. We are his agents. He is a father and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone to the new and triumphant arch which through which we passed freedom. All right, so you've learned a lot about self-will run riot. The root problem of alcoholism is selfishness and self-centeredness. We're not management material. Is everybody ready to put God or higher power? I don't care what you even call it. Don't care. Right? Is everyone here, or is anyone here, willing to put God in charge of their life? By a show of hands. Okay. So, now comes an action step. Page 63, second paragraph. It says, we were now at step three. Many of us said to our maker as we understood him, all right, if you got bad knees, you can stay sitting down, but we're going to do this one from our knees. This is an action step. We're going to do a prayer here. All right?
Whatever. Keep it between the
lines. Okay, is everyone ready? God, I offer myself to thee. To build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness, as I would help power, my love, my way of life. May I do thy will always. Awesome. And then it says, we thought well before we're taking this step, making sure we were ready. Uh-oh. If you weren't ready, buckle up. Things might start to change. What word do you hear at the end of every prayer?
Amen. Amen.
What's not at the end of this prayer?
Amen.
Okay. That was not an accident. We've started a process here. Okay? The amen doesn't come until the end of the seventh step prayer. We've started something here. Now let's just look at this prayer and break down the language to see exactly what we're talking about, because for some of us it just seems like a bunch of words just kind of strung together. Most of them I don't understand. Okay, let's just take a look at the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Right? It means I'm not the boss anymore. I'm not management material. I haven't done a very good job. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Well, in the last paragraph or in the other page, it said selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problem. So I'm asking to be taken away from the bondage of my mind, my bondage of self, right? That I may better do God's work. Here's the contract in the third step prayer. At least this is the way it was taught to me, okay? Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. So the contract here is, God, take away my difficulties, and I'll help your kids. Simple. And that has been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, is as I'm immersed in service work and I'm helping his kids, my difficulties are taken away. The bondage of self has been taken away. When I get away from doing what I need to do, the spiritual malady comes back. I get twisted up in my skin. I may start making really bad decisions, right? And I'm obsessed with me yet again. So that's the contract that's here. So the...
About the helping, right?
What's that, sorry?
About helping his kids.
Oh, God help me and I'll help your kids. It's basically a contract. Step three contract. Right? And again, that's my experience in AA, is that if I continue to, and it's again, not being attached to the results, right? Some people get well, some people don't. Some people might flip you the bird, right? Again, this isn't about the results, it's me trying, right? So the action step, go forward, is each morning, it says upon awakening, right? There's some other prayers that the big book has us add, and we'll get to that when we get to that. But upon awakening, again, I showed up here as a atheist / agnostic. I don't go to the washroom. I don't go have a coffee, none of that. I'm right from bed floor. I roll out of bed. I'm onto my knees. Now, do I always believe in what I am doing? No, I do not. Right? It's one thing my sponsor said to me in early recovery is, do I care about what you think? No, not really. Do I care about how you feel? No. Not really. I only care about what you do. I only care about what actions you take. There are many days I do not believe in what I'm doing, but I do it anyways. All relates back to step one. I got my ass kicked by alcoholism. Okay? I do certain things each and every day. Sometimes I feel connected. Sometimes I don't, but I do them regardless. Okay? So I'm going to start each and every morning with the third step prayer. A shorter version of the third step prayer. And just say this anytime you're feeling anything less than wonderful, just God, you're in charge, or thy will be done. I use God, you're in charge. Sometimes you might have to say that 10 times a day, maybe 20, maybe 100, maybe 200, right? God, you're in charge. It gets me away from self-will to God consciousness, right? And again, maybe a couple hundred times a day, you might have to do it. Don't know, right? We're just going to wrap up with one thing here. And this is the idea of taking your time to do the steps. So over on the bottom of page 63, what it's telling me to do, and because of the format, we obviously aren't going to be able to just launch right into this. We'll be going into this next week. Right? But what it's telling me over on the bottom of page 63 says, next, we launched on a course of vigorous action. Has anyone ever seen anyone launch slowly? Okay. It's telling me that immediately after doing the third step prayer, I've got my pen out and my paper out, and I'm going to start writing inventory with my sponsor. Okay. So again, this isn't meant to be as in lieu of one-on-one work with a sponsor. If you don't have one, get one, right? If you want what we have and you're willing to go at any lengths. Gives us some timelines here. Now, again, the original founders of our program were 9 days and 14 days sober, and they were through the work and actively helping other alcoholics. One of the things I heard around here for a long time is you need to be a year sober before you can sponsor. Could you imagine if our founders waited a year before they started sponsoring? A bunch of us here would be dead. I know that, right? Nowhere in our literature does it say to take our time or wait, right? Our founders, 9 days and 14 days sober. The founder of AA Chicago, it says on one of our pages, I'll steer us there in a second, it tells us how long he took to do the work. It's a four. Four what? 4 days, 4 years, 4 weeks, 4 months. What do you think it is?
4 hours.
4 hours. Okay, page 263. Let's just take a quick look at that. This is the most controversial part of Alcoholics Anonymous, is the idea of announcing yourself as recovered and taking your time. Page 263, top. Dr. Bob's afternoon off, he had me to the office and we spent 3 to 4 hours formally going through the six-step program as it was at that time, right? It was a six-step program back then. It was the Oxford group, which developed into the 12 steps after that. But it tells, now I don't take people through in 3 to 4 hours. I'm usually 2 to 3 weeks. Right? I go really, really slow. So, but again, the literature tells me over and over, let's hit one more timeline here. We're in the top of page 64 before we wrap it up for the day. Which many of us had never attempted, though our decision in step three, or the third step prayer, was vital and crucial, which means it's very important. It could have little permanent effect, which basically is saying it's useless, unless at once, okay? Another timeline. Unless at once followed by the strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. It treated my alcoholism, right? We had to get down to causes and conditions. And that's going to happen in the inventory work, and that's what we're going to do next week. All right. Any quick questions?
What were you talking about with the prayer thing in the morning? What? You're talking about prayers in the morning. What page was that on?
What other prayers that?
Yeah.
Pages 86. Yeah, so page 63 is the third step prayer.
Yeah.
And there's some additional prayers over on page 86 that it says what to do upon awakening and when we retire at night. We will go through that again when we get to those steps, but if anyone wants to start doing them now, those are over on page 86. All right, 90 minutes. Exactly. So, all right. Thanks, everybody.